So I've tried to assemble different talks in one, trying to show a variety of things. I prefer to do that rather than entering into the details of everything. So I try just to throw a number of experimental facts that we have had for the last 10 years and trying to show you, that they bring a lot of information on the systems. And if you want to discuss in more details, we can. So the idea is to first to, you know, in the high TC systems, you have some disorder, and the disorder, which can be native, is not always that controlled. It might depend very much on the system, as I show you, and it might be important in the physical properties. So it seems that if one has to, one wants really to understand clearly what happens in this system, one has to be able to understand the disorder as much as possible. So have two ways to understand the disorder, which is try to characterize the one that you have in the material. The other way is to try to create it by doing some tricks. So that's about what I am going to consider. And the two figures there are showing you some of the effects I'll look at. So the idea is, I'll start by this idea, which has been advocated by STM experiments, that there is for phase and charge separation in the cuprates. I'll show you that this is not necessarily true everywhere. This will be the first point. The second part will be the way you can control defects in a system by doing chemical substitutions, but also by other means. And I'll be interested in looking at specifically speedless impurities, which happen to be quite interesting in this correlated electron system because they induce a staggered magnetism, which in some sense is a very good probe of the existence of the correlations in the system. And we'll see that in the cuprates, this staggered magnetism has some interaction with the fact that the system is a metal, and you find it by something which looks like a Condor effect, at least for people who knew the Condor effect before doing that work. The second kind of defect that we can introduce is the electron irradiation. They are very interesting because, as you will see, you are able to work on a single sample by changing the number of defects progressively, and that is leads very accurate information. And so on the transport properties, this is extremely good technique because the samples can be very small. The second thing I'll try to look in more detail, all this is more concerned by the properties in the normal state, but I'll show that there are also very interesting effects in the superconducting state. Try to conclude on the results. So if you look at the classical phase diagram of the high TC system, well, this is a complicated phase diagram with many questions still open. I think everybody is somewhat familiar with this phase diagram. The largest peculiarity being the pseudo gap, which is not understood really today, which could be either a crossover or a phase transition masked by impurities precisely. It could be associated with superconductivity. One might have one or two other parameters in this phase, for instance. There are many questions open, and I'll not enter there. There is another one which is somewhat interesting, which is the transition, the metal insulator transition, which occurs somewhere here, and which is not well characterized. Well, it is characterized depending on the system, but clearly there is a big dependence on the system, and this is something also which has to be understood. I think these are the two parts of the physics of this system that will be addressed with these experiments today. We plan to try to see whether we can learn something on the transition to the Fermi liquid, but it's not easy up to now. So the main point is that all these line, this regime, it's clear for everybody that magnetic correlations are very important in these underdoped materials, and we'll show that this is true even in the overdoped material. So to come back, one of the things which has been underlined very much is that this regime has a lot of inhomogeneities and defects, and that this could play a large role in the physics. So it might be true, but one needs to have very good tools to learn about this disorder in the experiment. So there is an experiment which has done a lot of, has had a lot of impact, which is an experiment done in Davis group by STM, in which you find that the density of state in superconducting state that you see on the tip of the STM has a large dependence with position on the sample. And this has been shown that you have nice maps with nice variations when you go along lines, this kind of stuff. Images are beautiful with STM. It's a very good point. And this can be interpreted as being associated with a distribution of hole doping in the system. And this is the analysis done by Panetal, in which he shows that this corresponds to a variation of oxygen doping, which would correspond to 0.08 to 0.20 locally, with a gap which could change from 30 to 55 milliEV with a broad Gaussian weight on this. So this is really a very inhomogeneous behavior, and this is very, very puzzling. When you do nice maps, this is really experimentally a very, very beautiful work in which they can have images of this and showing that you have patches which are 30 angstrom diameter roughly, and this is the same in underdoped optima and with a large modification on this 30 angstrom kind of. And basically they say here you have underdoped material, like here you have optimally doped material. So it's really a very large problem. Well, this puzzled me very much because for the long experience we have with NMR in IPCO, we never had the feeling that this kind of inhomogeneities did exist in the system. And so we did, although it was very clear for me from all the experiments we did from the early, early 90s, even 89, we knew that the system was rather homogeneous. But when you see this beautiful experiment and the impact they have, you have to do something to convince people of your feelings. So this is what we did. And we start with these experiments, which are yttrium NMR shift measurements. The initial experiments are dated 89, in which we discovered this pseudo-gap feature, that is the strong drop of the susceptibility. What this experiment measure is essentially the susceptibility versus temperature. Locally on the yttrium site, so that is the measuring the susceptibility of the copper oxygen plate. And what you can see is that in the optimally doped, we have something very flat. And when you decrease, you have this pseudo-gap which appear when you decrease the whole content. And this is the kind of analysis that we have. And this is just measuring the mean value of the spectrum that we observe in NMR. And this is the way you got this pseudo-gap line, which you take the maxima of the susceptibility curve and you plot it versus whole content, and that gives you this antiferromagnetic superconducting, and this is the pseudo-gap line, as we did it at that time. But this is done by just taking the average, the mean values of the NMR, as you see. And there is so this is this, for instance, here is the position of the mean value, which is plotted versus temperature. This one is the position versus temperature. And the interesting thing is, you see that in this regime, you have a strong, strong dependence with whole content. So you have here a way to probe the distribution of whole content in your material if there is a microscopic distribution. So the mean value is just measuring mean values of chemical shifts, hyperfine couplings, and susceptibilities. But the chemical shift and the hyperfine coupling do not have temperature dependencies. The one which has the temperature dependency is susceptibility. So it's a very nice way that if you look at the full spectrum, it is just the histogram of this quantity. So you are really measuring a histogram where this part is due to bone disorder or structural disorder, and the disorder of the susceptibility, that is of the whole doping, is included in this term. So when you want to analyze spectra like this, you have hidden in this disorder, which gives you disorder of chemical shift or hyperfine field, and the whole doping disorder, which gives you the susceptibility, the variation of the temperature dependence of the susceptibility. And this is the main point. As the temperature dependence of the susceptibility is the only temperature dependent part, if you try to fit the spectra versus temperature on all the temperature range by playing on a distribution of whole content, you can, by fitting on all temperatures, you can represent the distribution of whole content in your compound. To show it, I just turn side down this curve. I remind here that the yttrium is probing really things locally because it measures shift associated with the susceptibility of the 8 neighbors. So it's really a very important local probe. Also, it's really sensitive only to the 8 neighbors. And here I put spectra, for instance, this spectrum taken here at 120K, and this is the red spectrum, which average is here. Mean value is here, mean value is here. So what you have basically is the weight. The distribution that you have is just telling you the weight of the maximum weight you can have at different oxygen contents in the material. And you can see immediately that the overlap, for instance, of these two is weak, extremely weak, nearly zero. So it tells you that you don't have a mixture of these two compounds. If you had a mixture of these two compounds, you would have something which extends like this. So the fact that you have no overlap was really a proof for us that the distribution cannot be as large as the one advocated in the BISCO experiment by STM. So what we did is performed an analysis of the NMR spectrum in which we try to fit the spectrum with distributions. You don't see there are a few points here. I don't know why this doesn't appear, but we really can fit quite nicely the spectra, and I'll give you the way. What we do is just put a distribution of oxygen content, use the shift versus temperature curve to reproduce the expected spectrum for a given distribution, and you do a loop and try to get out the thing that you have. And what we get is this. The distribution of oxygen content for the O7 compound is this one and this one. And you can see that if we change only slightly the distribution, we change completely the spectrum, which doesn't fit the data. So this is a reliable distribution. In fact, there are two distributions which would fit depending of how much disorder you put in the chemical shift parameter, etc. But roughly speaking, you can see that the two distributions do not overlap, and they are rather narrow in oxygen content. And you can convert the oxygen content distribution in a whole content distribution just by using the TC versus oxygen content curve. So this would be the distribution of whole content in the system. And to understand what I say, you have to see that this was the PANS distribution in Davis experiment in whole content. So you see it's very sharp as compared to this, and even this is very sharp. We have a tail which does exist. It's clear that there is a distribution, but you have to remind that in the NMR experiment, we are probing 0.5 gram of sample. So the distribution that we have could be macroscopic in the sample and not microscopic. That is, if we did take STM-like picture, we would find things even narrower than this, because this is really the 0.5 gram thing. So all this, and this was also in lanthanum strontium, there is an NMR experiment which shows that there is a big distribution in lanthanum strontium. Sorry, this one I think is the BISCO, and the lanthanum strontium is this one. Or maybe my arrow just moved, sorry. But you have the width. The width is much larger than this width in these two systems. So basically, there is no big mixture of underdoped in the optimally doped or of optimally doped in the underdoped. This is the main thing I want to say. Okay, so that tells us that different systems have different disorder.
Yeah.
Yes?
So was there something that went in which assumed something about the distribution of the other disorders that you had?
Yeah. We put it at as the maximum as we can imagine, and this is just slight bone disorder in the system which give you those parts. So we have, of course, some disorder, but which is not the whole doping disorder. Whole doping is the largest effect.
So what is your conclusion that the IPCO is cleaner less disorder?
Yeah, definitely.
Is it possible to do NMR in the BISCO?
Yeah, it's possible, but the difficulty is that in these systems, that's why it has not been done, BISCO and lanthanum are systems in which you have such a large structural disorder that the parts I am mentioning, the sigma and the hyperfine couplings, are themselves quite a lot distributed. So in that case, you don't have the sensitivity to see the part which is just due to the distribution of susceptibilities. Mm-hmm. And that's because, for instance, BISCO has modulations. And all these modulations are giving quadrupole effects, distortions, which depend how they match with the lattice. Which all this kind of disorder is always present in the system. But it's not physically the same as having less holes in some part of the sample than in other. Of course, the other thing you can say is that STM can be probably done as well in IPCO. And some people say that in IPCO it's clean. Some even say that in BISCO it's cleaner than the Davis result.
Because the other interpretation is that the surface is a lot more of course. At the bottom.
Of course.
Without
of course.
Going those experiments, we will never know.
Absolutely. This is another problem. The surface can have difficulties. So this is the advantage of the NMR here, is that we are probing the bulk. We are probing huge masses of sample and getting an information which seems to be rather homogeneous.
I could add, there also recent experiments by MOOC on YBCO on neutrons, mm-hmm. claiming that charging homogeneities are quite important in YBCO as well.
Yeah, but I think it's always very difficult. I have been very careful to study the two compositions, which are the most studied, in fact, which are the 0.7 and 6.6, which happen near a regime where you have nice ordering. If you go towards 6.5 or 6.45, we know that samples even evolve in time. And there is a, so you can have disorder, clearly. If you want to find disorder, you probably can even induce it everywhere if you want. So it's more difficult. So problem is, where do you find a situation where the disorder is weak? And I think this is a very good case. There is still disorder. Even in IPCO, there is some disorder. But it's not as large as saying that you are mixing two phases. So if you want to create disorder in a controlled manner, one good way is to induce defects by yourself. And easiest is to put chemical defects. So this has been done for a long time, which is to try to do substitutions of cells. This is the first thing I consider, and we are going to consider the case of zinc, which is well known. But before doing that, I want to insist on the fact that when you take the best single crystals of the materials at the optimal, that is really in the regime which is usually the easiest to achieve, you find that the transport properties of the best single crystals are similar. You always have this linear behavior in the T-linear terms, which are not very different in slope, but you always have a residual resistivity. And in IPCO, the residual resistivity, if you just interpolated, would be negative. In the other systems, you find a residual resistivity. So that tells you immediately that you have some defects in the samples. So the thing which is even more interesting is to find that you have some correlation between the TC, the optimum TC of a family, and its residual resistivity. So this is quite, what we have plotted here is the 2D resistivity divided by the slope, that is assuming that the slope is independent of the system. But as you see, it's not much dependent in any way. And you see a nice correlation with the optimum TC. That is, the system with a low optimum TC has a high residual resistivity. So you could always think that the defects that you have, which I can consider as native disorder in the materials, could be responsible for the fact that they have low TCs. If you want to work with disorder-free system, you have to use highest TC systems. That's essentially the lesson, and IPCO is one of those. And there is a lot of work done on LASCO and BISCO 2201, which are nice systems because their TC is low. So you can work, for instance, with a field, you can kill superconductivity. You have tools that you can use when TC is lower than the optimum. But you might be doing a different physics by doing that. So let's put disorder, at least if you want to study the influence of disorder, it's probably much better to do it in a system which has as less as you can as a start. So what we did is put impurities. We use three type of impurities because they are quite, well, because we succeeded in substituting them on the copper side. And because they have different characteristics. The nickel is 2+ and has a spin 1. The zinc is 2+ and has no spin. And lithium is 1+ and has no spin. So using these substitutions, you can study the response of the material to a change of spin, local spin or local charge perturbation. The other way you can create defect is to use high energy electron irradiation, which is done at low T. High energy means mega electron volt, that is the electrons which you throw on your sample just kick out sites and bring them so far in the lattice that they don't recombine. So you create essentially vacancies, which could be copper, oxygen, yttrium, or barium. Any site can be displaced. But we shall see that all the physics that happens in this material is controlled by the fact that you have kicked site in the copper oxygen plate. And the interest of this technique is, contrary to chemical substitutions, is that you have an excellent control just by controlling the fluence that you send on your sample. You just control the number of defects, and that in a given sample that you can follow up with increasing irradiation. So what is the interest of studying the local response the response of a system to a defect? This is well known. For a metal with dilute impurities, we know that you have Friedel oscillations if you have a charge defect, or a KKY spin oscillation if you have a spin local defect. And for a 2D system, this should have this kind of behavior. But in magnetic systems in which you have antiferromagnetic correlations, the response that you have is a staggered magnetic response. That is, if you do a perturbation on a site, you have a response which is going to be plus minus depending on the sublattice on which the system is, if it is an antiferromagnet. So basically, by studying these responses, this one or this one, you get information on the properties of the material. In that case, you get responses on the Fermi energy and the band structure, and on this you would get information on the extension of the magnetic correlations. The problem with high TSC is that you have a problem with spin and charge, and you have both of them, and there is some difficulty in understanding what is this response. But at least we have a situation which can be probed experimentally. And the NMR of the host nuclei, so the impurity is sitting here. If you look at the host nuclei and look at the NMR, you can probe this local response in the material. Well, basically, if you put an impurity, a magnetic impurity, for instance, in a system like that, you have magnetization which is parallel or anti-parallel, and going on from a neighbor, first neighbor to second neighbor, et cetera, et cetera. And you have a situation in which the first neighbor shell will sense a given staggered magnetization. The second nearest neighbor will have a different, the third different, et cetera. And so you expect different lines corresponding to the neighborhood you have from the site. And essentially, the problem is that you never resolve completely this structure. You could have one resolve or few resolved lines which correspond to sites near the impurities, and the other one are going to just to broaden the main resonance, which this one, which is the resonance of the host nuclei far from the impurity. But in both cases, what you are measuring is locally, by the width of this, you measure the susceptibility with a coefficient which is linked, the width of this is giving you susceptibility through and depends on the concentration of impurities, and the position of this is just independent of the concentration, but gives you directly the susceptibility of the impurity. So you have a way to check locally the susceptibilities induced by the impurity. So for instance, the thing we did was to do NMR measurement in IPCO and on the yttrium NMR, and we found three lines when we put zinc in IPCO, and these two lines have the temperature dependence, which has nothing to do with the temperature dependence of this line, which shows up the pseudo gap. This one do not show the pseudo gap and give you the Curie type of susceptibility. And they can be associated to the first nearest neighbor yttrium to the zinc, to the second nearest neighbor yttrium to the zinc, and then the last one is the rest of the sample. So this we could do for zinc, for lithium, which are two cases in which we put a spinless impurity here, and also you have a spinless impurity, you find an induced magnetization which is oscillatory and which has a temperature dependence, which I'll show later on. So the basic information is that this correlated system is such that when you apply a field, you create a staggered magnetization around the non-magnetic impurity, which is characteristic of the magnetism of the planes. So this reveals the existence of the anti-ferromagnetic correlations, and we'll see that this is true even in slightly overdosed materials. This induced magnetism has been studied in many cases. First, our group, we did that, so it's a long story. And it has been done also on aluminum in Lascaux. And it has been done in spin chains and other systems. The reason is it's difficult to do the theory in the cuprates to try to understand that, but it's much easier to do for lower dimensions. So in 1D chains, you can do things, and you show very nicely that the staggered magnetism has exactly the correlation length that you can calculate, even in the pure the correlation length of the pure material. This has been done in Ibanio chains. These are one-dimensional chains. If you put non-magnetic site on the nickel site, you induce this kind of effect on the line in that case, and the staggered magnetization vanishes on a distance which is exactly the psi which is computed for the Haldane chain, because the Ibanio is a spin one chain with Haldane gap. The fact that this seems to, for me, to be a very nice way to study the pure systems quite indirectly using these impurities. In fact, if you do careful measurement of the susceptibilities by taking the contribution of the impurities to the macroscopic susceptibility, you can determine the properties, at least of this moment, which is induced by the non-magnetic impurities. and for or by magnetic impurities. Nickel is a magnetic case in zinc, and you find moments which are not so far from what you expect for spin 1/2, but not for a spin 1. Nickel should be a spin 1, and you find, you see, the P-effective for a spin 1 should be 2.8, and you find a P-effective which is much smaller, rather as expected for a spin 1/2. For zinc, what you find for IPCO 6, this is by forcing Curie terms through the data. The accuracy becomes very poor in this regime. As you can see, the fit is not perfect. And the accuracy here is rather poor in zinc, in the case of zinc in IPCO 7, the susceptibility is small. But that tells you that when you are, for instance, for nickel, you find moments which are not much dependent of hole doping. For zinc, the dependence is very large. And you can see it here, for instance, the zinc 1% is here, zinc 066 zinc 1% is here, 07 zinc 4 is here. So you have less magnetism with more impurities. So it really tells you that this term vanishes, decreases when you increase hole doping. But this experiment could be done with a much, much greater accuracy using the lithium NMR. The advantage of the lithium case is that lithium goes instead of a copper, but has the advantage that it's a nucleus that you can study by itself. It can send, it has a very high sensitivity in NMR. It's a large gyromagnetic ratio, nuclear gyromagnetic ratio, and it couples to the copper directly, so it measures the susceptibility on the four nearest neighbors directly. So if you plot the shift of the lithium NMR versus 1 over T here, you find for IPCO 6.6 here something which is a nice Curie law. But if you go now to higher hole doping of the system, that is 684, 696, et cetera, 07 here, even calcium doped, which means that you overdoped using calcium instead of the yttrium site, which is 2+ rather than yttrium, which is 3+. So by doing that, you see that, as shown by macroscopic susceptibility, the susceptibility decreases progressively when you go towards high hole content in the system. This is done for a single concentration of lithium. But also the temperature dependence switches from Curie to something which is no more linear, but you can fit with 1 over T plus theta, and which defines, I'll call that a vice temperature for the time being, something which appears like a vice temperature. This, of course, we checked that it is independent of lithium concentration. That is, the shift in NMR just measured the single impurity susceptibility. So this kind of 1 over T plus theta behavior is very reminiscent of what is found for Kondo impurities in classical metals. That is, that you reach at low temperature a susceptibility which becomes independent of temperature. So if you plot this theta versus hole doping, you find this behavior, that is, the Curie temperature is zero, the vice temperature is nearly zero in 6.6. And increases abruptly when you arrive to 6.8, so when you begin to reach the optimal regime, and becomes very large when you reach the overdoped case. And this is this corresponds to the fact that the susceptibility becomes small. When you increase theta, you decrease the susceptibility. So, but still, even in that case, you still have an induced moment which you cannot expect if you don't have correlations in your material. So all this tells us about the magnetic properties in the normal state. We can also try to look on transport using the fact that electron irradiations create defects which also seem to behave similarly to the zinc. To show that, I just show you here an old paper by Chien et al., who did the transport property with zinc, optimally doped system, and you have this linear behavior. When you increase zinc doping, you the shifts vertically and the TC decreases. If you do that with electron irradiation, you start with a single crystal which behaves like that, and you see you have an increase of the resistivity without change of the slope here. So you have a nice Matthiessen rule which applies and which tells you that you just increase the contribution by creating defects. You add resistivity associated with the scattering on the impurities here, and at the same time you decrease TC. All this, because as this slope is somewhat correlated to the hole content, you know that the hole content is not changed in this process, but you also can measure the hole effect and find that it doesn't change at all when you increase, at least it has the same changes as for zinc. So essentially you have, by this defect that you create by electron irradiation, you have point defects, which are the relevant defects to scatter in the planes, and no change, no significant change of hole content, at least you cannot see it. And this you can follow by increasing the irradiation rate, and you can do it, of course, on many different systems. I show very typical curves, one in the thallium compound, which is overdoped with the nearly T squared, it's not T squared, it's T1.6 temperature dependence, and you see that when you increase the radiation, you have a curve which shifts, but you also have terms which appear at low temperature. The same for the underdoped. You have, this is the pseudo-gap type of feature seen on the resistivity. When you increase the electron irradiation, you see the curve shifting, and you see tails appearing here at low temperature and TC decreasing. One more proof telling you that the pseudo gap is not changed by the defect. The more you increase, but this is something we knew from NMR for a long time also. So it's just checking that also tells you the hold doping doesn't change, etc. So it's really a very nice situation because you are creating defects in the material. There are many, but the most important for the transport are those of the planes, as you can assume. And you can see that in the planes, you didn't change the whole the pseudo gap. You do not change the whole content, but you change, of course, the scattering quite a lot. And the interesting question is, what means these terms? What is the origin of these large increases of the resistivity? You can see that in these two materials, these increases are much smaller here than here. The increase here, if I take, for instance, the same residual resistivity as here, the increase is very small here while it's very large here. And this is something which we have tried to explain. So maybe the interesting point is that in the thallium case, these are really very easy to explain by a weak localization effect in 2D. This is a 2D system which, when you create defects, you do induce scattering. You increase the elastic part very much by doing that. So you increase very much the disorder. So in that case, you expect weak localization effects. And we just plotted the extra conductivity versus T over T0, and we scaled that because for different irradiation effects, we could scale the curves as expected for weak localization effect. That is that the delta sigma has log T over T0 behavior, which is this one plotted here, with the coefficient of the slope, which is given by alpha, which is usually of the order of unity, and P, which is the power dependence of the inelastic part of the resistivity. So this is a rather nice situation. In fact, even cleaner than the actual case which was studied at length with films. People did use films to study weak localization effects at 2D. Here it's a nice case because the scattering is intrinsic to the planes. and is rather well controlled. In fact, we can use for the speed the P which corresponds to the temperature dependence of the resistivity, which is, as I told you, T power 1.7 or 1.5, 1.8. Usually in the films, people do not even know what is their inelastic part of the scattering. They always have to assume things on it because the scattering is on the surfaces of the films. You have defects on surfaces, so it's a problem. Here, it's nice 2D systems in which the scattering is 2D. the thing we did is we tried to see what happens in IPCO 6.6. As I told you, this increase of resistivity was so large that you cannot explain it by any weak localization effect. So what we did is try to see how it behaves with the concentration of defects. And this is shown here. If we divide the extra contribution to the resistivity at low temperature by the residual resistivity, which is determined by the concentration of defects, we find something which is really nearly independent of this concentration of defect. That is, the increase seems to be linear in the concentration of defect, except that you have superconductivity which arrives and which kills the measurement. But roughly speaking, you can think that you have a situation in which the induced scattering is proportional to the number of defects. And this is what you expect for Kondo type of situation. It means that this term could be essentially associated with the temperature dependence on the scattering rate on the defect. If you do the same thing for thallium-2201, it doesn't work at all. The scaling is absolutely nonlinear. The reason is that the weak localization term behave as the square of the number of defects, the square of the resistance, while the Kondo terms are linear. So this might then be a contribution to the scattering due to the Kondo effect. If you look at the situation, it's reasonable because when you have a large Kondo temperature in classical system, the scattering is you are at low temperature as compared to the Kondo temperature. In that case, the scattering is temperature independent, so it adds you something which looks purely elastic. So a high Kondo temperature gives you something which looks purely elastic. A low Kondo temperature gives you the log T term usual for, I am speaking here in terms of usual metals and usual impurities. Here we don't know. We have unusual metals with unusual impurities. Another argument for that comes from transport data. Measurement for zinc in this compound done by Ando's group show that you have, of course, low T contribution to the resistivity. But associated to this low T contribution to the resistivity, they find a magnetoresistance which is isotropic. And this is classical of what happens when you have a spin effect. A spin effect gives you a big isotropic contribution to the magnetoresistance. So also, this term would be also compatible with the Kondo type of behavior. But we need to try to understand that better. One point is that if you look at this, the transport at low T, you have a metal insulator transition. And this is interpreted as a metal insulator transition. When you find a resistivity which climbs, people have been always saying this is a metal insulator transition. But it's not clear whether this is always a metal insulator transition or whether this is a Kondo effect due to some defect that you have in the structure. The fact that this line is very much dependent of the cuprate family is, for me, an indication that this line is really associated with the intrinsic disorder of the different phases. For instance, to do these measurements in very high field, you need to use a low optimal TC system to do the measurements. So you choose a system which is dirty, essentially, from the start. These are the resistivities measured. I have to enter these are the resistivity that you measure in these systems with an applied field. So you need to push a very high field, and this is the measurement done in very high field, so that you kill superconductivity.
Yes.
So that shows that when you put very large very large field which allows you to kill superconductivity, you always have this high tails in the resistivity behavior, which allowed Ando to say that this was a metal insulator transition there. Because you cannot see
the numbers, I mean, 0.73, 76,
Of course, are those.
No, they're the same.
This line corresponds to the line, you see, because this seems to be metallic, and then you begin to get, so this line is the the temperature at which you begin to see this term pushing up. Okay, this is to tell you that many things depend on the actual disorder that you have in your system, and one has to be very careful before doing too much giving conclusions. Essentially, one has to know better what's playing a role. The other important information you get is the influence of the disorder on superconductivity. Let's take the case of impurity magnetism. We knew that I told you that when you put lithium in IPCO, we have a moment which is developed. And we can do the experiments at low temperature by NMR. And so we could check how the lithium NMR behaves when you go below the curate, the superconducting TC. And so this is, in red, is the Curie law that we see well above. In fact, it's measured up to 300 K in the normal state. And you see that when you go below the superconducting temperature, you still have this Curie term which goes up and up. And so these systems seem to have a Curie temperature which is independent, which is unchanged, let's say, in the underdoped case. So the Curie behavior of the moment goes on even far in the superconducting state, which was not obvious because people were somewhat forgetting that you had that a non-magnetic impurity could give you a moment. If you take the situation for the optimal doping, the blue line gives you the 1 over T plus theta law that we had at high temperature with a theta of the order of 130 K. And when you go in the superconducting state, you see that the behavior changes drastically. And in fact, you could interpret it as being a large increase of the moment, which would correspond to ultimately at low temperature to a different condo temperature, which would be 20 or 40 K. That is, you don't reach at low T a Curie law, but you still have a moment which becomes stronger. You go in the superconducting state and the moment becomes stronger. The same if you go to the overdoped case, the high T behavior, and that's what you reach at low T. So all this tells you that in the superconducting state, you have an apparent decrease of the condo temperature, or that is, the condo screening is reduced in the superconducting state.
Excuse me, when you say the moment becomes stronger, when you fit it to the Curie bias, the C in the...
Doesn't change.
It's just the theta that changes, right? So the size of the moment...
Size of the moment doesn't change. It's the screening of the moment which decreases. So this is maybe what he will say Monday, if I understand. So roughly speaking, there are many, many theoretical works which have been done to try to understand what happens to a local moment in a classical superconductor. Here we have a non-classical moment in a non-classical superconductor. And the funny thing is that all these theories have produced situations where the moment could be screened or over-screened or not screened, depending of the conditions and the ratio of the J to TC. So These theories have predicted, in fact, the situation which we seem to observe in a situation which is not exactly the one which should apply. I mean, roughly, we don't know why this moment developed, how they coupled to the electrons. We have no obvious way to define a scale for the coupling J between these moments and the metallic state. So it's funny that as you'll see, things are quite nice, and behave quite similarly. The other point which this impurity magnetism below TC raised is how to compare that with the local observation of zinc impurities in BSCO. Here again, these beautiful experiments done by STM, in which here what you have is a measure of the density of state at near zero bias around the impurities, the zinc impurities here, and this is the magnitude of this local dose peak when you go out of the zinc site. So the problem is, well, it's still a question which I think is not completely resolved. Is this local dose peak related in some sense with the Kondo resonance, with the Kondo temperature? Up to now, this has been essentially measured in the optimally doped sample, and there is only one measurement. One question which arose as soon as these experiments appeared is that these peaks of the density of states which are seen, which on the neighbor sites of the zinc, you see them on the site of the zinc and on these sites in red. And the NMR finds out that there are local moments here. And it's quite surprising to find that you can develop the local magnetism on sites in which this density of state just reduces to zero. Or at least is weak. So the question is whether there is a contradiction between the two. I think one of the arguments which is now quite clear is that this picture of the STM is not really is not really what happens in space, because the point is that when you are probing with a tip over a site, you are in fact probing through. You remember that STM is done, you have a BIO plane and CU2 plane in the below, and your zinc is in the CU2 plane, and you have to tunnel through the bismuth oxygen plane. And in fact, you have a filtering effect which makes that when you tunnel through bismuth oxygen plane, you don't tunnel vertically to the side below, you tunnel to the four nearest neighbors. So in some sense, you are constructing here an image which is transformed by this filter effect, and the density of state should in fact be very large on these sites. So this is the way to reconcile the two observations. So this is just to show you that one has to be very careful about the pictures which are seen in these beautiful experiments. Pictures are always telling you a lot of things, but which could be wrong in reality. Let's go to transport properties in these electron irradiated cube rates. The interest, up to now, I discussed this part. And the interest of the electron irradiation is that you can increase the irradiation, and you can follow what happens to the material. You can even reach TC equals zero working on a single sample. And this is quite nice, because you see that this parallel line goes on. You have really a very nice situation for that, in which the number of holes doesn't change in the material. Matheson applies quite nicely. And you have this TC which becomes smaller and smaller, and you can study TC versus the impurity content, I would say. And this is then the TC versus irradiation fluence. And you see both in IPCO 7 and IPCO 6.6, we find something which is very linear, down to TC equals zero. This is somewhat puzzling and with well-defined transition. In fact, the transition that we have for the low temperature samples are extremely narrow. And so the homogeneity of the irradiation process is very good. It's a very clean experiment. So the point is that what you do expect usually is Abrikosov type, Gorkov type of behavior when you put defects in a system when they are pair breakers. And this should be like this. And this is not seen, obviously. There are many discussions about the reasons why Abrikosov-Gorkov doesn't work. One is that this is a mean field treatment based on BCS theory, and which takes a special average of the gap, while we know that in this, and which should be valid essentially when the distance between impurities is smaller than the coherence length, so that you have an average order parameter in your system. This is certainly not the case, at least the measurement with zinc in BISCO in STM show that both these peaks and those peak at zero bias have a dependence with distance which decreases very fast on a length scale which is comparable to Xi, which is of the order of 15 angstroms. So within 10 or 15, even 7, 8 angstroms, you lose your order parameter, and this means that you have a gap which is very much dependent of position with respect to the impurities. So you are really in the opposite situation to the Abrikosov-Gorkov type of determination. So people have tried modifications of Abrikosov-Gorkov, but basically they always find out this kind of strong curvature and drop, which doesn't seem to be linear. So there is a question which is opened by this. The other type of arguments is that we are dealing with systems which are considered as bad metals with a low, with a large resistivity, because here we have increased the resistivity quite a lot with the defects. And in that case, you could have a problem linked with the fact that it's the resistivity at TC which drives the stiffness and which makes that it's the stiffness of the order parameter which defines the transition and TC. So we try to use their kind of behavior. Then you find something which is no more linear, which curves the other way, because if you plot with rho at TC, of course, rho increases a lot. But I don't understand the meaning of this type of fits. They give numbers for the parameters which are very puzzling, and which there have been other arguments about that. I think I go very fast.
I have a question on the previous plot.
This one?
Yes, this one. So if I extract the KFN from just naturally
E square over
HC.
We are still
KFN equal 1 would be where?
Well above. We are not yet reaching the Yoffe-Regel type of limit.
Well, we are still the underdog, you would be.
Even in the underdog. We are not yet reaching the situation for the Yoffe-Regel limit. So they are still rather clean, also TC has gone to zero. So to conclude on all this, which I think I have been short on all these experiments, what I want to say is that we have shown that one has to be very careful on the native properties of the systems. Some systems are cleaner than others, clearly, and one has to be cautious not to generalize observations done on one system to every system. In fact, the patch structure revealed by STM in bismuth 2212 is not generic of the cuprates. I think it's probably a surface effect. This is my opinion, but it's not so clear at this level. IPCO is really a good system. And there are other mercury compounds are rather good too, seen by NMR. Or thallium-2201 is also a very good system, which seems to be rather clean as a starting material. The effect of the use of in-plane substitutions allows you to probe the magnetic response of the plane. So you have this induced staggered magnetism. You can study how this magnetism interferes with the carriers. Low T irradiation allows to produce a well-controlled disorder, and which allows you to go to study the transport property in detail. If I look at the information that we get above TC, first, with the non-magnetic impurity, we reveal the existence of correlation. We are trying now to study in more detail the spatial extent of the staggered magnetism and its variation with temperature and hold upping. I think this is still very interesting information which we carry, and in fact, in which we can learn a lot by working on spin chains, which we are doing at present. So on this, there is still a lot of activity in this part here. I didn't mention in detail the case of nickel, which is a spin 1/2, but this one is very weakly coupled to the carrier and doesn't perturb the magnetism of the CO2 plane as much as the zinc, and that is seen on the experiment. For spinless defect, we have seen that there is really a universal behavior. We have compared the case of lithium, which has a charge, and zinc, which has no charge, and we see really very, very identical effects, I would say. They are strongly coupled to the carriers, and we see this condor type of behavior. We see that this susceptibility decreases with hold-upping. This could be, of course, connected with the pseudo gap. This is also what Kevin will say certainly Monday. The condor contribution to the transport properties, we apparently see that at least we have proposed that the anomalous terms in the transport contain some scattering associated with the magnetic moments induced. This seems also to be confirmed by the magnetoresistance. In the superconducting state, we showed that, I didn't mention that, but it's clear that the impurities are very important because the scattering of the impurities, show that the fact that TC decreases whatever the nature of the impurity and its scattering shows that the D-wave symmetry of the other parameter applies. This is also seen in the characteristic of the scattering by STM, of course. The fact that the TC depression, of course, tells you that. We have seen that the moments that are induced by the spinless impurities survive below TC, but we have seen that the condor screening is reduced, that is, the moments develop nearly fully in as soon as you have any gap, the superconducting gap or the pseudo gap. The link between this observation and the density of states observed by STM is still not clear for everybody. We would like to see how this STM peak moves with hold-upping, for instance. So this is not yet done. So we would like to see whether there is any link between this peak and an eventual condor resonance, whether we could see a condor resonance in the normal state above TC by STM. The depression of TC tells us that we have to go well beyond the Abrikosov-Korkov limit. Why is it, do we have this kind of behavior which seems to be linear? In fact, we have some characteristics of this, of the behavior of these systems when they are very highly irradiated. We find a TC which is very well defined, which is something which is very puzzling and has to be understood. Thank you very much.